Welcome back to Dakota Midday. I'm Kara Hetland, and joining me in the studio is Tim Shorn. He is a professor of international studies at the University of South Dakota. Thanks for coming back and being on the program.
It's my pleasure to be back.
So last night, Frontline aired a new documentary called Inside Assad's Syria. What's your impression? I mean, we're both kind of speechless here
right.
as we were chatting.
I mean, it's a very interesting perspective because clearly most of what we have been watching and getting in the U.S. has been from the perspective of the opposition forces. Mm-hmm. And while the West has always been fairly aware of what the Assad regime is like, it's interesting to see what's going on within the Assad-controlled areas, and especially Damascus, during the civil war, which is now in its
fifth year.
We're approaching our third year. The war started in earnest in 2012, but the protests had been going on well before that, and so it's. Nothing that's going to end anytime soon, and it would appear that based on what we saw in the documentary last night, the Assad regime and its supporters are in a wee bit of denial that perhaps things aren't going quite as well as they like to portray. I mean, there were some truly surreal moments within the documentary. The preparation to open up the new resort in Homs was something out of a science fiction movie, it seemed. The one moment of truth, I think, was when Assad was giving his speech on TV to his supporters, where he commented that they're simply running out of soldiers, that the death toll has been high, also defections, people escaping the country, and that Assad has acknowledged that on their own, the regime is not able to control much of the country, even in under a best case scenario for them.
Do you think people in the United States have a clear understanding for what's even happening?
I don't think so. And I think part of this goes back to earlier in the war when we were focusing on the notion of chemical weapons. Then we started to focus only on the issue of ISIS, that we forget that there are people who support both sides of the civil war fairly strongly. We also are not paying near as much attention as we should to the humanitarian catastrophe. And finally, the long-term damage to Syria is something that is nearly incalculable at this point. The economy has been destroyed a good deal. The infrastructure has been mm-hmm. destroyed. Relationships within the country have been destroyed. And I'm not sure we're putting together all of those pieces.
No, but the documentary last night really kind of painted the picture of what it looks like there.
Right. And it's the destruction of the cities. And the difficulty when we discuss civil wars is that rarely are there any parties with clean hands. And certainly the Assad regime's hands are dirty. But when we look at the opposition forces, too, when we look at the Nusra Front, which is affiliated with al-Qaeda, when we look at ISIS, I mean, certainly they are not going to be discriminating when they carry out attacks. And even some of the other smaller forces, at some point there were well over a 1,000 different independent militias, forces, fighting groups who were just part of the opposition. And it's going to be difficult to control all of those different factions. And clearly, you're going to have people with dirty hands on both sides of the battle.
It seemed that the Syrian people, though, blamed the United States.
Certainly those who are supportive of the Assad regime, and that would primarily be members from the Alawite community, also the Christian community who make up a minority, a fairly small minority as well within Syria. And you do have Sunnis, too. There are some Sunnis who support the Assad regime as well. And, you know, as in any country, when conflict occurs, you have a bit of a rally around the flag for those who support the central government, and that's certainly what has occurred within Syria as well. The problem that Assad faces is that he has the support of only a minority of Syrians. And consequently, it's going to be very difficult to repair Syria in any way, shape, or form as long as Assad only has the support of the minority of the population.
And a large number of people are fleeing, refugees as well?
That's correct. Uh-huh. This is truly a crisis that we haven't seen in the Middle East for quite some time. I suppose we could go back to 1948 and the creation of Israel and some of the population movement that occurred there. Syria had a pre-war population of about 23 million. We can now figure that right around 50% of that population is displaced. And that means that 7 million, easily 7 million people are displaced within the country. They, for one reason or another, they have either chosen not to become refugees and flee across international boundaries, or they're simply unable. But we have over 4 million international refugees who have fled Syria. And this raises the specter of conflict occurring in other countries in the future. And we know that in a lot of these cases, when you have that many refugees, the likelihood of them all returning home is almost zero. And so that's going to be a long-term issue that the international community needs to address. So, and that's going to continue to get worse, especially now that we see the Russians involved and a new offensive.
Right. So enter Russia, enter Iran being invited to the table for talks. That was in the news today.
Right. And I think that from a strategic standpoint and even a practical standpoint, I think it's absolutely necessary to have Iran at the table. They have been one of the major supporters of the Assad regime. That has been the case going back to the early 1980s. So they're going to have to be part of the discussion. And I think that it's possible that they could play a positive role. Whether they choose to do so or not remains to be seen. The new elephant in the room, Russia, who was playing a somewhat hands-off approach, not completely hands-off, but certainly much less active role up until recently. Now that they are present, we simply ensure that this conflict goes on longer and that more and more areas become part of the conflict. Not like any place has escaped, but areas that perhaps things had begun to settle down in are now going to be back on the table, so to speak. And Russia is going to work very hard to support Assad and to go on the offensive.
And the United States wants Assad to go.
Right. And certainly in Europe, there are some who are starting to talk about the notion of, okay, maybe Assad can stay and we can work out a political solution. But I think, you know, that horse has left the corral. That cow is out of the barn. There is not going to be enough agreement either within Syria or outside of Syria to allow Assad to stay and to reconnect the pieces of Syria. There are too many memories. There are too many doubts about a role that he could play. I don't see the civil war coming to an end as long as Assad stays in office.
Opposition forces, are they unified or are they all separate?
They are to a great extent separate, and therein lies one of the major problems for not just the U.S., but other countries who support the opposition. You will have Saudi Arabia and some of the Gulf countries willing to support some of the more Islamist forces, while the United States would rather support somebody like the Free Syrian Army, which tends to be slightly more secular. You have Turkey, who keeps trying maybe to straddle the fence but falling off of it, probably more involved with assistance to ISIS than we had realized until recently. Turkey is absolutely opposed to Assad staying in office, and for a while it appeared that they would support anyone who was willing to take on Assad.
Now, the documentary last night hinted that the opposition forces are all being drawn into ISIS, and also ISIS is American-made.
And that is certainly the line that Assad is going to put forward. Mm-hmm. It's the line that the Russians are going to put forward. And it is not true. the United States has certainly been very strong in its opposition to ISIS. The problem is, where has some of the support that we have given to the more secular forces, where has some of that support ended up? And we know that some of that support, whether it be financial or weapons, and even people we have trained, have ended up then going over to ISIS because they see it as the most likely candidate for bringing down Assad. So to say that we are intentionally supporting ISIS or backing ISIS is incorrect. To say that some of what we have provided has ended up in the hands of ISIS is probably true.
So I'm in Syria and there's bombs dropping all around me and there's propaganda all around me as to who to blame, and all I want to do is feel safe. Who do I believe?
Probably no one. Or you choose the message that brings you the most comfort at that point, and you hang on to that for all it's worth. Because certainly within the documentary, we saw people talking about Assad being the single person who could bring the country together. Well, that's nonsense. And we wouldn't be in this place if that message was true. But these are people who have benefited from the Assad regime. And I don't mean that as a judgment, but they felt secure under the Assad regime. They were provided for under the Assad regime. They're not going to turn their back on Assad and his government at this point. And so they have essentially signed their deal, and they're going to stick with it. So I have no doubt that they may believe that, but again, if that were true, we wouldn't be where we are today.
Now, the filmmaker, Martin Smith, mm-hmm. was invited by the regime, mm-hmm. right? And he spent 3 weeks there in July. Mm-hmm. So how is it really? How much has changed even since July?
You know, what we have probably seen is the Assad's ability to control territory, geography, has slipped. I mean, there now, the Assad regime is now able, now asserts authority over only about 25% of the territory of Syria. They do have, theoretically, a majority of the population living in that area, I believe, but even that is probably not true anymore because so many people have had to flee the country. But whether or not the people who are living in Assad-controlled territory want to live under Assad regimes, an Assad regime, is a whole other question. Essentially, people had to flee in the direction that they could flee. And in some cases, that was to territory that was controlled by Assad. But we don't know how many of them would want to live under an Assad government in the future. So clearly, his control over both territory and people has been slipping since this documentary was made, which is one of the reasons, I think, that the one and only one of the reasons why Russia has gotten involved. They want to kind of staunch the blood flow of the Assad regime. And they know that now that the regime is running short on soldiers, probably running short on even supplies to some extent, that Russia needed to play a more active role. And that would embolden Iran, that will embolden Hezbollah to also commit more fully for the long term.
And the majority of the fighting is happening, what, outside of Damascus?
It is, but not too far outside of Damascus
right.
anymore.
It's getting closer.
Yes, and we've even seen ISIS incursions into areas close to Damascus. And they didn't necessarily hold the territory, but it gave them an opportunity to fire the proverbial shot across the bow that essentially saying, we can reach just about anywhere. And consequently, the message they would be sending to the Assad regime is that your days are numbered, you need to start making alternative plans, but the Assad regime is not listening to that message. And ISIS, the ability of ISIS to hold on to all that territory is not assured either.
The Assad regime in a bit of a denial?
It is.
Okay.
It is. This is part of the problem, is that the Assad regime went all in early on, that there was not going to be a negotiated solution, there was not going to be a turnover of power, there was not going to be a fleeing of the country, that they were going to hold on for all it was worth, hoping that eventually the opposition would just peter out, that they would run out of energy, weapons, supplies, fighters. That hasn't happened. And I think at this point, though, the Assad regime sees no way out, that they see no way to turn the tide. And so their only option is to keep pushing forward, so to speak.
And so let's improve tourism.
Yeah, that was the most Alice in Wonderland aspect of the entire the entire documentary. I had always wanted to visit Syria. Mm-hmm. I think I may hold off for a while. Even with the new resort, as attractive as it looks, I think I'll
it
wait.
It was sure pretty, wasn't it?
Yes, yeah. It was. And the thought that they could make that argument with a straight face, and chances are some even believed it, that is what is remarkable, and the state of denial. But when there is that much fear amongst both the government, members of the government, and supporters of the government, where they have managed to convince themselves that if they surrender, if they lose, that it is death for all of them, then their only alternative is to continue fighting on, and they will do anything they can to reinforce the denial.
It backfired. Social media backfired.
Right. And that was, I found that especially interesting, that there were simply too many people within Syria who were unwilling to play the Assad regime's game and were going to do everything they could to ensure that the message went out that, you know, do not believe the propaganda coming out of Damascus.
Right. And so I went and looked at the hashtag, hashtag summer in Syria. Right. I'm sorry I did.
Right.
The
right.
images are beyond what you see on the news.
Right. And I suppose I'm not a marketing person or a public relations person, but you had better have a really good idea about what the response to your message may be before you put the message out there. And the Syrian regime really managed to bungle this particular campaign that you know, they left it way too open for opposition members or opposition to the regime to grab a hold of that message and to undermine it.
You can't undo it.
Right. And now the pictures are out there. And I suppose at some point the regime, if the regime were smart, would end that, would close that feed. But by this time the damage is done. And nobody who watches the report from Frontline last night is going to be under any illusion about what is happening in Syria, despite the Assad regime's best efforts to put a positive spin on it. Nobody is going to go on a summer vacation or a winter vacation to Syria at this point. And the longer this goes on, just the greater destruction is going to occur, and the lesser likelihood that that Syria will ever recover from this.
From a storyteller's perspective, mm-hmm. in watching this, this beginning and ending with a concert was striking in and of itself too.
Right, and I didn't realize that Damascus had a symphony orchestra until I saw that last night, and they were very good. But it showed the extent to which the regime is willing to go to put on the appearance of everything is normal. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, what is more normal than going to a symphony concert, going out to the cafes, going shopping? I mean, that just is the picture of life as usual. The problem is that while you're at the symphony concert or while you're shopping, you have to hear the bombs bursting nearby, the jets screaming overhead, getting the word that a loved one who is in the military has been killed, getting messages from your family members outside asking what is going on. And so it is one of the comments I saw when I was looking at the Frontline website today was, you know, who is really going to visit or who is going to believe this Potemkin village? And that's what it is. It's a facade put up to impress outsiders to create an alternative reality that ultimately has to fail.
Do you really know if you live in Syria, who's dropping the bomb?
And that's the question too, is that there's probably enough doubt that you can convince people that it's the other side, that it's ISIS dropping the barrel bombs. Well, mm-hmm. we know that ISIS does not have the ability to drop barrel bombs, but the people within Damascus, the people within areas that support the government, don't necessarily know that, and especially if their only source of information about what is going on is the government. So they're not going to be aware of the abilities of the opposition forces. They're not going to understand that ISIS only represents one part of it, because that's not the message that they're being delivered.
Hmm. And journalists can't really get in and paint the whole picture.
Right. And that's one of the interesting aspects, too. I mean, clearly Martin Smith was invited and allowed to go in, but the Syrian government realizes very quickly that you cannot control the message when you're not able to control the messenger. Mm-hmm. And consequently, they understood that they needed to have him leave, because anything that he reported was going to undermine the reality that they were trying to create. Not that anybody within the government-supported areas was going to be able to see that message, but it could have an effect on those outside of Syria who still supported the regime.
Okay, Tim, I want to thank you for taking time and coming on and explaining this for
us. My pleasure. I'm happy to be back.